Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Frank Perez and Howard Phillips Smith about their new book, Southern Decadence in New Orleans. It's a great pleasure to welcome Howard Phillips Smith and Frank Perez to The Reading Life. Howard is the author of Unveiling the Muse, The Lost History of Gay Carnival in New Orleans. And Frank is the author of In Exile, The History and Lore Surrounding New Orleans Gay Cultures and Its Oldest Gay Bar. And he's the president of the LGBT Archives of Louisiana. Howard's joining us by phone from California, and Frank is here with us in the studio to talk about their new book, Southern Decadence in New Orleans, a history of the annual LGBT celebration that takes place over Labor Day weekend. Howard, welcome back.
Hello there. Good to be back.
Frank, it's so good to see you.
And you as well.
Now, how did you two get together to work on this book, Howard? You're doing some of it long distance, I imagine.
We did. Frank and I, it seems like we've known each other forever. I met Frank through his book, In Exile. He actually mentions me in his book, and we started communicating, and we got together, and we really clicked. We really had a lot of things in common and a lot of goals for gay history in New Orleans, and it just seemed destiny that we were going to work together.
Well, and on this project, too. I mean, so fascinating to me that Southern Decadence began as something completely different. It was a much smaller celebration put together by a small group of friends who called themselves the Decadence in the Treme neighborhood. Isn't that right, Frank?
That is correct.
So tell us about researching that early history.
Well, if there's any topic to research that's going to be interesting, it's gay history.
Right.
In any aspect. So we spent a lot of time talking with former Grand Marshals and others who were involved in the program. Howard is an excellent interviewer, and he kind of tackled some of the early participants in Southern Decadence, and I kind of took the second half of the festival from the mid-90s to the current day. And between the both of us, we managed to talk to just about, well, almost every living former Grand Marshal.
And that's a lot.
Yes, there are 44.
Wow. So I wanted you to read one of the descriptions, Frank, by the early participants, because it talks so much about the feeling of this gathering. It's a very warm and expressive passage.
Sure. This is an excerpt from the end of Chapter 2. Looking back on the early years of Southern Decadence, Hemmings, who was Grand Marshal in 1976, recalled fondly, "There has never been a group of friends I've loved more in my life. It was the most wonderful feeling to sit with friends who accepted you for who you were, no matter what, even if the guy next to you was a 40-year-old man with a beard and a dress. I never laughed more or had better times with friends. That whole crowd, gay and straight, was filled with smart, witty people, any of whom might drop you to the floor with laughter at any moment. And they were warm and cared about each other and did things for each other on a constant basis. Sometimes they sacrificed for each other. They gave me so much solace and support."
I know. I love that. That sounds like a perfect New Orleans group, doesn't it?
It really does.
Now, over time, the history of Southern Decadence coalesced with the history of the gay community in the French Quarter. So let's talk about some of the highlights of that history. Frank, you want to start?
Sure. The 1970s were a very transitional time for society in general, and the French Quarter in particular. And we talk about that in one of our chapters in the book. In the early 70s, just a year after Southern Decadence started as a humble house party, we had the Upstairs Lounge arson.
Right.
Which was a seminal moment in our history. The French Quarter itself was undergoing a lot of changes. The counterculture movement arrived to New Orleans late, like everything else does. But you had Decatur Street was being transformed. The riverfront was undergoing a lot of changes, and societal mores toward homosexuality were also in effect.
There's even a special section about Anita Bryant, Howard.
Well, yes, she was really homophobic, anti-gay, and she was going to have this big rally. She, you know, her big slogan was "Save the Children," and the gay community in New Orleans was already organized through the gay crews and with Decadence, and there was a huge rally cry when she was visiting. And it really, I think it turned the tide because there were so many people in the streets protesting. So she really got a taste of New Orleans, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, Howard, when did you first go to Southern Decadence yourself?
Well, that was in the early 80s. I had moved back to New Orleans in the late 70s, and I have to tell you, it's like you're in the community, and Southern Decadence wasn't a big deal back then. It was very low-key, but, you know, everyone talked about, oh, Decadence is coming up, and I said, well, what's that? And I said, well, it's just fun. We're going to go to bars. We're going to get in drag. We're going to go to bars. And it just seemed like it had always existed. It was just something that people took for granted already. So that's what was so interesting about it. I participated a little bit. You could just join the walking parade at any moment. You know, it wasn't hard to find them on the Decadence Sunday. And then you could drink and bow out, you know, whenever
right.
you felt tired and come back. My recollection at that point was it was an attempt to just bombard the straight bars. That was the most fun. So it was this kind of terrorist plot, you know, just get drunk, go to, we were thrown out of what's the big tourist bar with the piano players and
Pat O'Brien's?
Pat O'Brien's.
Oh.
Thrown out of Pat O'Brien's. But, you know, most people welcomed us. So, you know, and that memory always lingered in my mind, and I became good friends with Blanche, who worked at the Golden Lantern, Edward Norton. And we, luckily, we communicated in the early 2000s when he had moved back to Alabama. We corresponded. He wrote me letters. We talked on the phone. I took notes. I never really thought about doing a book on Southern Decadence back then, but I had that material ready to go. So that really started the basis of the book, I think. And then discovering that the founders were still alive, many of them, and they still
right.
live together. That was my personal introduction to Southern Decadence, and then just kind of collecting this material. And Frank was on board from the beginning. We really had a lot of information. And I have to tell you, we never dreamed when we started the book 3 years ago that Frank would be Grand Marshal this year. We had
such luck.
So
Frank, what was your first time at Southern Decadence?
Oh, like most memories from the 80s, I don't, it's very fuzzy.
Stop that.
I think the first time I really recognized or understood what Decadence was would have been in the early 90s. Back then, it was just a very smallish local affair.
Mm-hmm.
There were no parade.
Small, yeah.
There were no parade permits. There weren't massive crowds. I mean, if you look at some of the pictures from the parades all the way up until the mid-90s, I mean, there were cars parked on the street. There was no
yeah.
police detail. No crowds. It was really a local affair, and even then, only for those in the know.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But now it's turned into something epic. I mean, it started off as this kind of regular quarter bar crawl, and now almost 200,000 people come.
Closer to 300,000 this year.
Really, this year? Oh, my
and
gosh.
You've hit upon a very important thing, Susan. It Southern Decadence has really outgrown the parade itself.
Right.
But the parade does remain at its nucleus. But I would venture to say that most of the revelers and visitors who come from out of town don't even know that there is a parade.
They're just coming for the weekend.
Right.
And you've gotten official recognition from the city as well.
Yes, for whatever that's worth.
For a couple of years now, really.
Well, what's really exciting is The Archives Project that Howard and I work with, we're having an annual fundraiser event soon, and we're honoring the founders of Southern Decadence because they have donated all of their memorabilia to the special collections at Tulane University. And the mayor has agreed to come and give remarks and issue proclamations. at this event honoring the founders of Southern Decadence, which would have been unthinkable 45, 46 years ago.
Right. That's just incredible. I don't know. It's just such a perfect event for New Orleans, as of course, you know. Now, you have some terrific interviews in an appendix to the book, and you talk with former Grand Marshals and participants. And one of the questions you ask is what Southern Decadence means to them. And I want to know what it means to you all, too. What is working on this book, and what has it meant to you, Howard?
Well, Southern Decadence is really special to me in terms of gay history, in terms of my personal life, my personal history. It really completes the circle for me, from Carnival, the other side of the calendar, to Southern Decadence. It's sort of a mirror of that. But it really brings diversity together. It brings everyone on the street. You're participating. There's so many little street parades. Like, I was watching clips from the underwear parade last night, and there's the red dress thing coming up. This, I think, all springs out of Southern Decadence, and this just coming together of friends, diverse collection of people, and just celebrating life. I think that's what it's about. And New Orleans fosters that. It's just an incredible city, the best city in the world, if you ask me.
Oh, me too.
Yes.
And, you know, some of these parades have not been without incident. I mean, I do love the story of the parade where the Grand Marshal went one way and the band went another. I mean,
well, that's a seminal moment.
Yes, yes.
Because the original founders sort of bowed out after that.
And, right.
It started becoming mostly a gay affair, and that was in 1981.
Right.
Which, you know, those queens, you just, anything to put on a dress and get drunk.
So, so, Frank, what has it meant to you? What has Southern Decadence meant to you over the years?
Well, the meaning has evolved for me. When I was much younger, it was just an opportunity to party and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the older I get and the more involved I've been with Southern Decadence, it's really about friendship. And that's what Decadence is at its very core.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1972, those group of friends were very, very close and wanted to celebrate their friendship. And to me, that's what it has remained. And that ties into the tradition of Grand Marshals selecting their successors.
I know. I love that.
Yeah. You see, a lot of people don't understand how that works. There's no application process. There's no bylaws or rule book or guidelines or criteria. If you're the Grand Marshal, you pick whomever you want to be your successor. And so, obviously, that usually means one of your close friends.
Of course.
So, I've been very fortunate in the last 4 or 5 years to have a lot of my friends be Grand Marshals. So, it means friendship to me.
So, talk a little bit about the life of a Grand Marshal, because it's a lot of work.
It has become a lot of work in recent years. Because of the parade permit and all the requirements that the city puts on us to produce a parade, it's basically a fundraising job. I mean, mm-hmm. It is a part-time fundraising summer job. To produce the parade usually costs anywhere between $10,000 and $13,000. And what makes it challenging is that the Grand Marshals are usually not selected until after Easter.
Wow, that's not a lot of time.
Only gives you a few months to raise that money. And so it is, it's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And what's the theme this year?
The theme this year, given the fact that the city is celebrating its tricentennial, is the House of Bourbon, Unleash Your Beast. So that gives people a lot of leeway and opportunity to go in different directions for their costuming.
No kidding.
Yes.
Just, the pictures will be spectacular.
Always are.
I wanted to mention, Susan, you know, very early on, this would be in the late 80s, early 90s, the Decadence Grand Marshals, they did raise money, but they raised money for AIDS,
right?
You know, AIDS hospices and things like that. So it does have a serious component to it as well. And those, we still raise money for charities. It's really important for the gay community to realize that.
Yes, the designation of an official charity, which is at the discretion of the Grand Marshal, began in 2011. And since then, in the last 7 years, we've raised thousands upon thousands of dollars for local charities.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the charities that Atticus, my co-Grand Marshal, and I have selected are the LGBT Plus Archives Project of Louisiana, as well as Team Friendly, which is raises awareness about HIV.
And those are both great causes. I think a lot of people don't understand that things like Mardi Gras Cruise and Decadence have that serious component, you know, into their work. And the other thing, you know, the average Joe on the street goes, oh, this is a great thing. It's happening this weekend. But the work of making it happen goes on all year.
All summer long, really.
And a lot of people are involved.
Very much so.
So thanks. So there is something exciting, though, about living the history of your writing, isn't there,
for both of you? It is amazing. Being a history nerd, I am just very proud and humbled to be a very small part of such a huge New Orleans tradition. And who knows, there may be a sequel in the works.
And what about you, Howard? You've lived a lot of this history, too, from your gay Mardi Gras book and this.
You know, in hindsight, it's like, you know, this is, I had to do the Carnival book. I had to do Southern Decadence. You know, you wonder why someone hasn't put all this together. It's, you know why? Because it's very difficult to mm-hmm. put all the pieces together. I think the mythology for Southern Decadence is that it's always been a gay festival. And to find out that it had very humble beginnings, you know, that these the founders had a small party and then decided to meet the next year and be in costume. It's just so quintessential New Orleans in my mind. So just putting this all together was a revelation. I think people really will be surprised by the total history once they read about it, you know.
I know. It's a very rich, mm-hmm. wonderful story.
And so many twists and turns, too. It's not,
yeah.
It's just not the parade, you know?
We've been talking with Howard Phillip Smith and Frank Perez about their new book, Southern Decadence in New Orleans. You can meet them Tuesday, August 28th at 2 at the 1850 House, 523 St. Ann Street, when they sign their book. Howard, Frank, I hope you have wonderfully decadent celebrations. And Frank, I wish you a wonderful reign as Grand Marshal. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Frank Perez was also part of our Tricentennial Reading List project. Here's an extended part of our conversation about LGBTQ books by other authors. So let's talk first about your book, In Exile, The History and Lore Surrounding New Orleans Gay Culture and Its Oldest Bar, which you wrote with Jeffrey Palmquist.
That's right. We wrote that, it's been 6 or 7 years now. And around that time, around 2010, I became very interested in learning more about our local LGBTQ history and was very frustrated to discover there wasn't a whole lot out there. And as somebody once said, whoever gets the vision gets the task.
Right.
So we started out just researching the bar, Café Lafitte in Exile, which is the oldest gay bar in the city. And the more we got into that, we realized we're going to have to situate the narrative of how the bar evolved into a larger context. And so In Exile, the book is really just scratches the surface and establishes the setting for the LGBTQ history of New Orleans. And it's not an exhaustive or definitive book by any means, but it is the first one that was ever written.
Wow.
And so we're proud of that.
And then the vision and the task grew to include the archives.
Yes. The book In Exile opened up a lot of doors for me. It opened up a door with Ambush Magazine, mm-hmm. Which invited me to start writing a history column on local LGBTQ history for them in 2012, which I'm still writing. Those essays will be compiled into a book at some point. And it eventually led to the creation of the LGBT Plus Archives Project of Louisiana, which is a nonprofit organization that works to preserve our local history.
Excellent. Now, two of the books that I think people read are anthologies. One of them is Love, Bourbon Street, Reflections of New Orleans, edited by Greg Heron and Paul Willis. And you also edited with Jeffrey, My Gay New Orleans, 28 Personal Reminiscences on LGBT Life in New Orleans.
That was a fun book to edit. I don't think anyone who's ever edited a book will tell you it's a pleasure to do. But we were very fortunate in that we got a lot of great submissions, and our vision with that book was to capture a cross-section of the LGBTQ community here in New Orleans, and I think we were successful with that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say, the LGBTQ community brings a lot of joy and flamboyance and art to New Orleans culture.
Yes.
And two new books celebrate that. One is Unveiling the Muse, The History of Gay Carnival in New Orleans by Howard Phillips Smith, which is the big gay coffee table book, don't you think?
It is an amazing fabulous book. I mean, it weighs about 50 pounds.
Yes.
But, you know, just the pictures alone, there are over 600 illustrations, make it worth the price of the book. Howard spent over 20 years researching that book, and it is, without question, the definitive book on gay carnival in New Orleans. It's a wonderful book. A lot of illustrations, a lot of pictures from carnival balls, a lot of costume sketches, early invitations, posters, and whatnot. It is
great
a treasure trove. Yes.
Oh, everybody needs that book. It's just a beauty. Now, some of the books about LGBTQ history are about the dark side, and particularly the Upstairs Lounge Fire. And this year has brought a major new book about that.
Yes. Robert Fiesler has written a book called Tinderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation, which is an excellent book. It's actually the third book written on the subject of the Upstairs Lounge arson. And what makes this book a little bit different than the first two is that it situates the fire in a national context.
Absolutely.
The first two books were, the first one was written by Johnny Townsend, a book called Let the Faggots Burn, which I think was published in 2011, many years after he had originally put the book together. And then a couple of years back, Clayton Delery wrote another book about the Upstairs Lounge.
The Upstairs Lounge arson, 32 deaths in a New Orleans gay bar, June 24th.
Yes, and that book actually won the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities Award in 2014 or 15.
Very well deserved. And Clayton's also the author of another kind of harrowing book, Out for Queer Blood, The Murder of Fernando Rios and the Failure of New Orleans Justice.
Yes, Fernando Rios was a Mexican tour guide from Mexico City who was in town in New Orleans in September of 1958 with a group of doctors and their wives. He went to Cafe Lafitte in Exile one evening and was picked up by a young undergraduate student from Tulane University who led him into an alley where he and two of his other fellow students from Tulane proceeded to beat him up and kill him. And so this book is the story of how that happened and really about the public reaction. The three boys did go to trial. They were brought up on murder charges and were ultimately found not guilty.
Right.
An interesting story about that whole tragedy is that a couple of years ago, I got an email from someone whose name I did not recognize, and I was about to put it in my spam folder when I saw in the subject line it said, Fernando Rios, murder. Come to find out, it was an email from the son of one of the murderers who had just informed, he informed me that his father had recently died, and in the process of settling the estate and going through the house and whatnot, he discovered that his father had been involved in a murder trial in New Orleans in 1959 when he was in college. And he did a Google search and he found a couple articles I had written about it. And so he was reaching out to me. And I communicated with him and kind of filled him in on, you know, what had happened and informed him that Clayton Delery was writing a book about that, the whole thing, and was able to put them in touch. And Clay went out to, I believe it was South Carolina, to interview him. And the full transcript of that interview is in this book.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting book. Clayton has proven to be a prolific writer. He's a longtime educator. He is currently working on a new book that grew out of the Fernando Rios book. When the boys went to trial, their defense was what is commonly called the gay panic defense.
Right.
We didn't want to beat him up. We had to because he made a pass at us, which really wasn't true. But that's been a common defense in hate crime trials for decades. And so Clayton is currently working on a book about the history of the gay panic defense.
Mm-hmm. And he is a good writer, a really good writer.
Yes.
Now, Now, another thing about LGBTQ books in New Orleans is fiction. And one book, I think, kind of put New Orleans on the map many, many years ago as a gay city, and that is City of Night by John Retchie.
Yes. For those who may not be familiar, John was a sex worker here in New Orleans, as well as in other cities. And this book, City of Night, is sort of a memoir, really, of his experiences in that field. The inspiration for the book was a series of letters about his time in New Orleans to a friend of his, and that evolved into City of Night, which is a landmark work.
And three writers, I think we really have to, you know, celebrate in fiction are Poppy Zeebright.
Yes.
Those novels were really important. Greg Herron.
Absolutely.
He writes so joyfully about New Orleans.
Yes.
It's a pleasure to read his books. And Gene Redmond, whose Mickey Knight series is growing every year.
Yes. New Orleans is such an inspirational place, whether you're gay or not. I don't know how you can live here and not be creative, whether it's writing or cooking or music or art or what have you.
Long enough. Talk to. Long enough.
We've been talking with Frank Perez, president and founder of the LGBTQ Archives of Louisiana and author of Southern Decadence in New Orleans, about books about New Orleans LGBTQ culture. For the ever-growing Reading Life Tricentennial Reading List and other episodes, check out wwno.org. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Poets Carolyn Hembry, Anne Babson, and Tiana Nobile read from their works Sunday, August 26th at 4 at Trio, 3835 Tulane Avenue, to mark Women's Equality Day and to benefit the New Orleans Abortion Fund. Howard Philip Smith and Frank Perez, who's the 2018 Southern Decadence Grand Marshal, signed their book, Southern Decadence in New Orleans, at the Louisiana State Museum's 1850 House Museum Store, Tuesday, August 28th from 2 to 4. Ingrid Green Adams, author of Speak, Lord, I'm Listening, John Frady, author of Brad Preacher, and Philip Pisciotta, author of The Calling, discuss their latest books and their commitments to their faith, Tuesday, August 28th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Margaret Wilkerson Sexton signs the paperback edition of her book, A Kind of Freedom, Thursday, August 30th at 6 at Octavia Books. Children's book authors Gary Alipio, author of The Craziest Fishing Tale on the Bayou, Vicki Branton, author of Don Quixote's Forever Birthday Story, and Stacy Miller, author of Sweetie Petey, will talk about their new children's books Thursday, August 30th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. And coming up, the Dickens Fellowship has announced its reading schedule for the novel Little Dorrit this year. And meetings begin Saturday, September 25th from 2 to 4 at the Bright Library at Metairie Park Country Day School. The reading for the first meeting is Book 1, Chapters 1 through 11. Open to all Dickens fans. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.